This episode contains spoilers for Season 1 and Season 2 of Stage Combat, A Mental Health Story. Hey, Stage Combat listeners, Sean Hayden here. Well, let's face it, for many of you, listening to Stage Combat, A Mental Health Story was a wild ride. You let us know in no uncertain terms that the story of what really happened at the Goodspeed Opera House left you frustrated, enraged, and even triggered as you heard many names over and over. Donna Lynn, Rachel, Gabriel Barry, Spockman, Aaron, and of course, Chad. But there was one other name that was really important in telling the story of Stage Combat.
I'm thrilled to have back with us Dr. Elisa Hurwitz. Hi, Dr. Hurwitz.
Hi, Sean. Thanks for having me.
Someone who was the voice of reason that helped us all keep it together.
If ultimately the purpose is the creation of the art and the art as commodity, you do better to treat your actors with the respect of autonomy and voice.
She was a voice of telling it like it is.
We have assigned gender to emotions, and it's bullshit.
And a voice of compassion.
Please, when somebody tells you what their experience was, believe them, especially if they're talking about their experience of being targeted or harmed by a power greater than themselves.
In this bonus episode, Dr. Elisa Hurwitz and I are going to unpack two seasons of Stage Combat, and maybe we'll get to know a little bit more about her in the process. Hey, our session has begun, so we better get started because Dr. Hurwitz is in. So, Dr. Hurwitz, Elisa, I want to tell the Stage Combat listeners how we met. I emailed you not knowing who you were. Actually, Dr. Michelle Sherman, who we know from the podcast, had recommended you. And I said, hi, Dr. Hurwitz. My name's Sean Hayden. This happened to me at the Goodspeed. I'm doing a podcast. And I'm wondering if you would come aboard and talk about mental health to our listeners. And then you emailed back and said, yes.
That was how we met. You know, for me, it was enough that you said mental health and you were saying that you experienced some form of, you know, somebody or an entity abusing a power differential. And I didn't need to know anymore because we just know statistically that when people say that somebody with power took advantage of that power, almost every single time it is true. I was on board and I am, you know, always here to talk about mental health and decrease stigma. I was game.
And that meant so much to me. And I remember telling my husband, Ian, because the idea of the podcast, I was never going to do it just telling my story. I told him, and we heard this in the finale, it has to be bigger than me. And I just thought, who is going to come aboard? So it meant so much to me. And then we would get on Zoom. It's a different app we use called Riverside. And then we talked some more and you learned some more about my story. I would say in this episode, and sometimes I would give you some parts of the script, and I would tell you what happened, but you hadn't actually heard the episode yet because we were still working on them.
Yeah.
And it was amazing just on what the facts I told you to say, Lisa, these are the facts in the episode. You would zone right in. And it blew my expectations of how a mental health professional could illuminate the story and also expand the story.
It was interesting to me to hear the episodes in a lot of ways. I didn't know the specifics or thematically where things went or the details of your experience that was being examined in that episode. But the truth about mental health are their truths, right? So even without knowing that information, that's where we went because that was the truth.
Before we revisit some of our moments together in Season 1 and Season 2 of Stage Combat, I want to tell the listeners a little more about you. I don't think people realize you're not actually based in New York. You're in New Hampshire.
Yes, yes. I'm a former New Yorker, quite settled in New Hampshire, but I'm there a lot, but I don't live there. Yeah, sometimes I'll get people contacting me asking where my office is in the city.
So how did you end up in New Hampshire?
I grew up in New Hampshire and I have family here and luckily I like them.
That's good.
And they like me. Yeah, we get along relatively well. My sister is my best friend, and we're all here within like a 40-minute drive radius of each other. And I really enjoy raising my kids in a village. And so we help each other.
And as our listeners know, at the end of every interview, we tell people that your practice specializes in the autism spectrum and gender identity. How did you come to specialize in those two areas?
It took me a while to kind of find my specialty. Interestingly, my first day of graduate school was in New York on 9/11/2001. So my graduate school experience was completely framed by trauma. We were safe. We were miles away. But that was the first day of graduate school, and it affected all of us. And there was a lot of really incredible work that was going on in the institutions around and in the city related to trauma because of what had happened, trying to provide best care for folks. So that really formed my foundation, my groundwork. And I really was interested in family therapy, and I still love it. But, you know, you kind of roll forward and see where things go. And I think there's a power in not mandating what your path is going to be because you don't know, and just being open to it.
Yeah, that's kind of where I am right now.
Right?
Yeah.
Right. And what ended up happening was that I developed a real love for working with folks with autism. And there is a higher incidence of gender diversity in the autism population. One really common theory about that, or popular theory, is that it's because people with autism are not as constrained by social rules and expectations, and that can cause difficulties and challenges in their lives. And it can also be freeing.
Interesting.
And through that, I've developed a specialty. That was over 10 years ago. And I really, really love the meaning that comes with providing a service to a population that is incredibly marginalized in this country, and just being a avenue for increasing access to care by being available.
Yeah. And one of the things I have had such admiration for you is just what a champion you have been for transgender rights at a really critical time.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was incidental, because the critical time, you know, just it came along, right? Because I've been specializing in providing care for trans individuals for over a decade. And several years ago, we started seeing the writing on the wall. We knew this was coming. And it's just gotten worse and worse and worse.
I just want to touch on briefly then, how, as people know you as Dr. Drama, in terms of speaking on panels about practices in the theater community, talkbacks, how did that sort of come into your life? There has to have been a lifelong love of the theater there, yes?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And lifelong. I'm old enough that, like, you know, the first music I listened to was on record.
Mine, you know, as well.
Records of Annie. Yes. But, you know, records of Pajama Game and Camelot and How to Succeed in Business and Annie. And I wore out the Annie record, wore it out. That was my first love. That was like my first kind of level. And my next level was live theater. We frequented Summerstock Theater and still do. And wherever there's theater, I'm there. I'm going. And so I grew up going to this place called New London Barton Playhouse. Actually, a lot of wonderful actors have come through. So the show was, for me, was I was 7 years old, and it was a chorus line.
Wow.
Yes.
You had very enlightened parents.
Yes. Yeah. I think my mom forgot what the song Looks 10, Dance. I mean, Looks.
Dance 10, Looks 3. Yeah.
Dance 10, Looks 3. Yeah. I think she forgot what this was about. Nevertheless, but I think you'd contextualize things for kids. My kids have, you know, watch the pro shot of Hamilton and know the whole cast album. There are curses in there, and there's reference to bad things happening. And we talk about it.
Yeah, it's different now than when we were kids.
Yeah.
I used to listen to Chorus Line while I was taking piano lessons. And I took piano lessons in a small town, and a gay piano teacher before I knew what gay was. But I would listen to his records, and I would listen to Chorus Line, which was something that was not allowed in my house. But I was aware that I was listening to something that in my mind was very scandalous. Mm. You know, I mean, even the Richie song just like blew my mind. How could they keep saying shit Richie, you know, over and over? So
yeah.
Yeah.
At 7, it's an ask. It flew over my head. It didn't even register. What resonated was that the people on stage were pretending to be somebody else and doing it what felt really convincingly.
Yeah.
and that they actually were different people than they were portraying on stage. And this game of pretend was so real and yet so distinct from who they actually are, that they were that good at this, that they could be a totally separate person. And I just thought that was fascinating.
And how interesting that your first foray into musical theater was a show where it's essentially a study in psychology of these dancers.
Yeah.
Giving, basically bearing their souls about their psychological makeup.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And that hit me. And I'm sure the same thing, I don't know if I've said this to you before, but I'm sure the same thing that interested me and interests me about psychology is a lot of the same thing that interests me about theater.
Oh, yeah.
Which is understanding human behavior.
I mean, that's what it has always been for me. I enjoy the investigative part of it. After listening to Stage Combat, people know I'm into investigation.
Yeah.
But it is that investigative nature of figuring out what makes people tick, what their backstory is, where they are, where they've been, where they're going. Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to recall what the process was like when we initially started our talkbacks with you, and you sort of inadvertently became the voice of Stage Combat for season one. Because we would have you in, and then it was like, Elisa, we have another topic. Can you come back? And you were just so gracious to keep coming back. And I remember at one point I said, you've kind of become the voice of season one. I hope you're okay with that. But you really, in what was a very confounding, aggravating, frustrating story for the listeners that provoked a lot of emotions, a lot of anger, you really were the voice of reason for so many of them. And I know I was so grateful for the conversation we were having, but we were actually having a conversation. I'm sure you realize this. So many of those conversations in real time, I'm working out things because I'm hearing them for the first time from you. And that's what our listeners are telling us. I'm hearing things that I've always thought, but no one has validated it. So even after going through a couple years at that point with my therapist, with my doctor, you were expressing things very specifically about the theater industry that no one else had expressed it.
Yeah.
And it was of tremendous value to me personally from a health standpoint.
Right. And I might not be saying anything different than the professionals you were working with were saying, but maybe in a different way. And it just, you know, when you say it this way, it clicks.
I remember our first conversation, we were talking about the mental health story that's in Billy Elliot. And I remember being so, if I listen back at it, it's a little scary because I'm so scared and stilted because I didn't even feel like I had the right to have a voice outside of the podcast, to ask questions, to be leading an interview. You know, I was still feeling so not worthy of expressing my voice, which was different from the podcast episode where it's traumatized and I'm in a studio. And then the more we talked, those conversations really opened up for me. What is your recollection about those talkbacks between the two of us?
I do remember seeing or hearing from you things clicking, which felt really nice. It felt really meaningful. The other thing that I found really endearing and what made it a continual yes, past the initial yes, was your willingness to share not just your story, but your emotion. And interestingly, a lot of trauma work is pairing the story, the memory, with the emotion.
Yeah, I would get emotional in some of those talkbacks with you. Yeah.
Yeah. And I just found that so endearing that you would share that emotion in our conversation and then incidentally with the larger audience. It just felt so real and honest and present. And I just thought, this is a man who's really invested in similar goals that I am of dismantling mental health stigma and having honest conversations, you know, without saying, well, the Goodspeed is the bad guy. No, like you said in the podcast, I want the Goodspeed to succeed. I want any regional theater to succeed.
Yeah.
I want them to do better. And I felt so on the same page with you.
Yeah, you know, at no point in the podcast do we say this person should not be within 10 feet of another actor. The idea was just to say this is what happened, but there were real mental health consequences and to show when this thing happened, it affected me in this way. And then to have a broader conversation with you from an industry standpoint, from a mental health standpoint about what are the ramifications and what are the issues that we're all facing as actors and what we're hearing in the story of stage combat. I want to revisit some moments in our conversations in the post-show talkbacks over the two seasons of Stage Combat. And I want to start with episode 4 of season 1. That episode was two mini episodes called Solidarity Roadkill and Fight Call. And it's the episode where we dramatized the initial fight call incidents with Chad on the Goodspeed stage. And I want to play a clip of that talkback with you where we were talking about the issue of consent.
What are we talking about there where I'm using in a broad sense and the way it's applying to me in this episode, the concept of consent?
Consent is giving your yes or your no, particularly applying it to the concept of intimacy. And, you know, we think of intimacy usually in sexual terms, but it's really, it can be emotional intimacy. You know, you can have emotional intimacy with somebody or, you know, somebody cannot ask for your consent for emotional intimacy, asking, you know, an emotionally intimate question, it can be thousands of miles away. And certainly physical intimacy can be non-sexual. It can be combat. It can be, you know, whether that is, you know, staged combat or being attacked physically.
It can be, I don't feel safe on stage with you, which is what I say twice in this episode.
Let's be clear about that. That's you being clear, saying, I don't consent to you hitting harder than we have agreed upon, or hitting somewhere that we have not agreed to and we have not previously choreographed. So consent doesn't only apply to sexual intimacy or sexual situations.
And I think that really was a big thing for our listeners to hear someone like you say that.
It's, you know, sometimes I think that my job is kind of like being Glinda the Good Witch, where she tells Dorothy that you've had the power all along.
Yeah.
You just didn't know it. You had to go on this journey. I truly believe I'm not ever telling people things that they don't know, even if it's not specifically in that language or from that perspective. I hope helping people empower themselves to know that they have the power now and it's always been within them.
Yeah. And even in those moments on stage, and I said this in the podcast, I knew I had a right to say what happened to my body. And I knew another actor cannot debate that. But there still is this need for us to hear someone from the outside, right? It's that thing that I'm not crazy. I'm not crazy, right? This is what we hear from our listeners, you know?
Right. It's validating.
I want to look at a moment in our post-show talkback for the last episode of season 1. That episode was called Terror. And in the talkback, we talked about the power of words. Here's that clip.
Whew, words matter, right? Like you said, words matter. Anybody who spent any time in theater knows that words matter. They're incredibly powerful. And so, you know, what I hear in the stage manager's response is blaming the victim. Well, you worked yourself into a tizzy. No, you are having a normal response to abnormal circumstances. Let me break that down. So you're having a normal response, which is to physiologically and emotionally be fearing for your safety, to abnormal circumstances, which is that there's a threat in the workplace.
So that really resonated with our listeners, that I was having a normal response to abnormal circumstances. You know, I just interviewed Matt Gutman from ABC News, who has a book about panic attacks. And he's done a lot of research about panic attacks. So not only is he bringing his story, but the research, the journalistic edge that he has. And he says, panic attacks are normal. They're normal, you know? And I think for you to say that what was happening to me was what my body was supposed to do, because the circumstances were so out of control. They were so abnormal. And that was a big aha moment for me.
Yeah. What our bodies and minds do when we're in stressful or traumatic situations is just to allow us to survive.
Yeah.
It's to get us through. It's survival. And so sometimes people will blame themselves when they look back. Why didn't I leave? Why didn't I do something? Because it was unsafe. So you were just trying to survive.
Yeah.
And I mean that both figuratively, safety, survival, and literally sometimes people's very life is at risk.
Yeah. And Courtney Loving, who was the trauma therapist, I mean, she
was great.
She was great. And she said, there's nothing wrong with you, Sean. It was your body was doing what it's been trained to do, what it's evolved to do. And kind of piggybacking on what you were saying, it was trying to protect you in the best way that it knew. And I know that's something that really resonated with our listeners.
Let's revisit a talkback we had in season one after episode 7. It was called Spinning Out. And we were discussing an essay that Kristen Chenoweth had written where she was talking about the injuries she suffered while working on a television series. And she was talking about how she was afraid to speak out. Let's play a clip from that talkback.
It's this fear of speaking out as actors. It is this fear of being a problem. And I know you work a lot in the community. I assume this is something that you're familiar with.
Yes, both as a person, as a human, you know, from the inside of not wanting to be a problem and from the outside, you know, and help their, you know, working with people who have grappled with us in some way, shape or form. And also somebody observing the theater community, the theater industry. And industry is really the word I think we need to run with first, which is that this all is symptomatic of capitalism, which has its strengths, but it comes at the cost of individuals because the goal is ultimately money-making. And if anything is perceived to get in the way of that, that person is the problem. We just take a step back from this for a second and say, okay, somebody got really hurt physically, and I'm sure that was horrible, you know, mentally too, really frightening. And she was afraid of being the problem. And if she had said something right away, they might very well have labeled her the problem. The problem is that money making can come at the sacrifice of individuals. That's the problem, not a person calling out a harmful practice.
And you heard in season two, for me to really acknowledge that, to really come to a point that this is an industry and it may be an industry that does not care about you.
Yeah.
And I think it was really powerful for you to call out the industry, to call out capitalism in a way that I would probably not have been comfortable with until I heard you say it. And now I've said it many times in interviews about this podcast, but that's something that you feel very strongly about.
Yeah. How do I put this? I just want people to feel validated that their experiences, right? That's the thing of like, you're not crazy. The situation is crazy. And in a way, I have a lot less to lose than the people inside of the industry in so many ways. I have relationships with theaters and PR people and managers and actors, whatever, but it's not my livelihood. So I can say it. There was an experience that I had in sharing my platform for trans non-binary folks to talk about their experience of a show on Broadway that a lot of people had experienced as erasing a trans story and then kind of gaslighting, saying that, no, what you think you heard when it was out of town wasn't what you heard.
Wow.
And that character never had that. And, you know, and in some ways it was, I have relationships with some of those producers who aren't bad people. But it's the entity, right? Sometimes the thing is just bigger than any individual. And I thought, you know, like that line from Hamilton, if you stand for nothing, what will you fall for? It's like, what I have to lose is so much less. So yeah, I'm going to share my platform. And if some people don't like this and they don't want to talk about it, you know, that's what it is. But I, you know, yeah. I was just sharing the mic.
And that really takes us to another point of that conversation in that same episode. I just want to play this clip.
You know, and I can't help in telling my story because what happens in my story is bad. But to realize the privilege I come from as a white cisgender male, who's also a lawyer, you know, who has a certain set of skills to be able to say, this is what I need or this is what happened to me. And I can't help but think for people who are more marginalized, if this can happen to me, do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah. How much more is happening to other people who have been who are minoritized,
who are marginalized,
have even more to lose and have been disenfranchised, you know, even more in terms of power structures, and how much goes unsaid?
And in this episode, and you can hear how hesitant I am. You know, I had this fear that I said, who's going to listen to my, and into season two, who wants to hear my story? Mm-hmm. Because I recognize the fact that I'm a white, cisgender, privileged, white male, a legal education. Who wants to hear my story? But then that really opened up something really big for me, Elisa. And to not be afraid to acknowledge, this happened to me and I came from extreme privilege and with a skill set that most actors don't have. We need to be talking about, if this happened to me, what is happening with our friends in marginalized communities?
Yeah.
And it's something I've spoken about frequently since then, because you opened up that conversation for me to not only see it in a more visceral way, but also to feel like I had a license to try to share what I thought about that.
Yeah, the solution isn't in not talking about our whiteness or our white privilege, so to speak, cisgender, able-bodied privilege. It's to talk about it.
Yeah.
You're right, acknowledging it is first. Understanding how these systems differentiate their oppression of people is second. You know, I think about the prominent people who have spoken out about abuses in the industry, like Christian Chenoweth, Patty Murin, you with this podcast, and Rebecca Kane. And what do you all have in common besides being harmed by the industry? It's not a coincidence that every one of you is white, able-bodied, cisgender folks. And I think about a few of the people I know who have spoken out within the industry, not outside of it, not having, you know, like kind of within their workspace, and who were not white, cisgender, able-bodied in whatever way, and who were just absolutely just treated additionally hostily. Yeah. And you were too. I don't mean to minimize that, but there is that extra layer, right?
There is that extra layer. And even with Rebecca and I, we spoke a lot and we were both very apprehensive in our own ways of what we were doing in our own platform. So if we're feeling that as white privileged people,
right,
then my God, how burdensome is it for someone who is in a marginalized community?
Right. And because you speak out and because Rebecca spoke out and Kristen and Patty, you're speaking out for everybody who's had an experience like that. It matters.
That's our goal, yes.
Yeah. And you know, at the end of the season, hopefully people have listened to the last episode, but right, your goal was to try to make this about more than you. Yeah. And in making it specific to you, right? What's the saying? Through the specific comes the universal. Right. So by talking about what you know, which is your experience, it made it about everybody who's had this experience in the industry, which is probably most of the people in the industry.
Yeah. And what one of the big surprises to me, I did not expect this, is that actors from all different communities, identities have responded to something in the story. The issues are so universal to all of us as actors. And I've been so happy and so honored that people see themselves in the story and even felt that they could reach out to me personally.
Yeah.
And tell me what the podcast had meant to them. What was it like for you as a listener after doing the talkbacks, but to, you know, to sit through and to simulate 20 episodes? What was that experience like for you?
I absolutely devoured the season. So every day that an episode or more would drop, I was listening to it. And even if I didn't get through it, you know, because I have kids who interrupt and whatever else life throws, I was on it. I was on the ride because, again, you know, I knew you were outlining for me before we would record what was happening in that episode, but it was an outline. So I didn't, and we've talked a little bit about the specifics of the experience, but I didn't know the whole picture. So I had the experience of just being a fan, honestly, of the series and just really being engaged by the storytelling. So in a way, I think that making this podcast was your return to theater because you created an incredible and engaging narrative as an actor and as kind of a multi-hyphenate, an interviewer and a producer, and you were doing all of that. But it was a piece of art and a piece of performance. And man, I was hooked. And there were just times where I was like shocked and surprised and horrified. You know, and I would text you and say, I can't believe they did that. Even knowing that you'd been through so many horrible things. When I just think about you just looking at the people around you, and like you acknowledge they had their own reason to protect themselves from the Goliath, you know, of the institution. Yeah. But just looking around you and just nobody, you know, you just pass that on stage. Yeah. Like, oh, can you go back on? You got to get back on. As if you hadn't just passed out on stage.
Can you do the finale?
Right. So Lee Mike's really listening to it was 100% as the honest, genuine fan of this work that you did.
Well, I appreciate that as our resident psychologist and as a fan. So, and you know, what might have been interesting for you, and you know, we had to rewrite the finale because you heard in the finale, my doctor said it was the podcast that had really advanced my health. And so when I started with you, I believe back in, I want to say October of last fall, probably, versus where we ended up at the beginning of the summer, that unexpected transformation I was able to experience in my mental health put me in a very different place than when we sat down for our first interview.
You seem lighter.
Well, you and I, we had dinner, you remember? And you said, I'm going to paraphrase here, correct me. You said in trauma therapy that the last thing they ask the client, the patient to do, is to write a narrative, right? And I sort of wrote the ultimate narrative.
You did. You wrote the narrative.
So the cathartic, the healing effect of it was, I did not expect any of that. And I think my doctor was very surprised too. It makes sense to him now. He's listened to the podcast, but we did not expect it to have that. And I think so much of that is also from, you know, it's so much about community and validation, because that's what I hear from the listeners every day. And that's the power. We keep coming back to this. It's the power in telling our stories. That's why we say claim your story. It's not a nice little catchphrase.
Yeah.
It is everything. And, you know, our listeners write and said, I'm claiming my story. I stood up for myself at work today, or I left this job. I didn't need to play this character and to put up with that. So that's been very powerful.
It's beautiful.
So many of our listeners write into us, and I wonder what you would say to them. They really feel like they've been through something when they go through an episode. Either it's bringing up things that they've experienced, or a lot of the episodes are very intense. You know, we really indulge in those moments. It's a mental health story to really show you what's happening with my story. And what would be sort of your thoughts to them on how to best process this, if they're still processing it? Because I think that's something that needs to be acknowledged for the listener from a standpoint of self-care.
Talking about it, we're not made to hold any harmful experiences on our own. We're incredibly social creatures. We are not meant to carry the world on our back. So talking about it to people around you, to friends, to people you trust, if you are experiencing symptoms of anxiety, panic disorder, post-traumatic stress disorder, and such things as having nightmares, having flashbacks, increased heart rate, a feeling of panic, a feeling that you just want to absolutely run away and escape from a situation that is on the, you know, objectively safe, change in your mood that's sustained over time, difficulty sleeping, decreased appetite, these kinds of things, therapy works. With the acknowledgement that in this country, we don't have universal health care. And so there are accessibility issues, yeah, which is crazy. But if you do have access to therapy or can find a low-cost resource in your area and are experiencing any of those symptoms, therapy works.
And you know, after the last episode aired, we got more messages that week from people who said, I now know from listening to the podcast, listening to the healthcare professionals such as you, Dr. Hurwitz, I know that there is professional help there and that I don't have to carry this pain alone, that I can be healed. And they told us, I made an appointment with a therapist, or I'm going back to my therapist who I haven't seen for years. And that's really been really tremendous to see the effect that the podcast has had with people in that regard. And that's so much in part to you, Dr. Hurwitz, Dr. Michelle Sherman, our other therapist, and mental health counselors that we featured on the podcast.
And you, right? And being open and honest about your experience and, you know, completely, I don't know if you were comfortable, but you just didn't hesitate to share. You know, then I went to therapy, you know, and then I saw a psychiatrist.
Well, I just dove in. It's like, if you're going to go for it, you got to go for it. I think in some way people feel like they know me after 20 episodes. So to actually take you into, here's meeting the therapist, here's meeting the psychiatrist. This is what it's like. And hopefully feeling like you're hearing someone else's story, I think it's had the effect on a lot of people that, well, maybe I should try that too. And I'm thankful that, you know, it just happened to be what happened, but the finale episode did have a healing property to it. Despite, you know, you heard that mediation scene, but ultimately it was a story about healing and trying to move forward in that.
What a beautiful impact to have, you know, and the ripples that this podcast that you've created has created. So, you know, I think about the ripples of giving voice to the abuses of power in the industry, which are very much not talked about. And so talking about it just really takes the power away. Referencing a movie that I absolutely love, The Labyrinth, for people who know that cult classic with David Bowie. At the end of the movie, Sarah, when they confront each other, Sarah and Jareth, the Goblin King, and she realizes, she has this moment where she pauses because she can't remember the line, and then she remembers it. She says, "You have no power over me." This whole time, she couldn't defeat him or his base, his labyrinth. And the moment she said that, he disappeared. He vanished. He was gone.
Yeah.
I hope people are having that moment for themselves.
We have to keep talking. We have to keep talking. We always repeat, and I've said it in many interviews, your statement, every time we talk about mental health, we're taking a brick out of the wall of stigma. So I think we've taken a few bricks out.
Amen. Yes.
Dr. Hurwitz, thank you from the sincere bottom of my heart for being so much of the soul of Stage Combat, for also for being my friend.
Thank you. I am really grateful that you sent that email and that talking about mental health could bring us together and that I could be some part of telling your story, because it's been really meaningful to be part of this.
Thank you. I'm going to read your bio. I hope it's not the last time. Dr. Lisa Hurwitz is a clinical psychologist in group private practice in New Hampshire, specializing in the autism spectrum and gender identity. She also applies her professional knowledge to consult with theater companies, conduct post-show talkbacks, and interview Broadway actors. Remember, you can follow her at drdrama.com, and her Instagram is TheDrDrama, and that's actually spelled T-H-E-D-R drama. Thank you, Dr. Hurwitz.
Thank you, Sean.
Stage Combat is a production of Haywood Productions, LLC. And just a reminder that nothing in this episode should be construed as medical advice. Please consult with a medical or mental health professional. You can also check the show notes for information on mental health resources. If you would like to share your story, send us a DM on Instagram at Stage Combat the Podcast IG, or an email to stagecombatthepodcast@gmail.com. I hope today and every day brings you an opportunity to claim your story.